Thanks for tapping into an episode of Untapped Keg, where we believe that the only right way to sobriety is the way that works for you. Totally messed up this intro, but we're going with it because I'm excited to be here with my friend. Oh, I'm RJ Zimmerman, in case you didn't know. I'm excited to be joined by a guy who does really cool shit, knows a lot of really cool things, has ADHD and autism, and is the founder of the Idea Nexus Ventures, Leo Guinan. How are you doing today, Leo?
I am doing wonderful. Appreciate you having me on, RJ.
This is going to be fun. For those who don't know, go check out our earlier episode. It's less than 20 minutes, but it's just us laughing the entire time. And we're laughing about rejection sensitivity dysphoria with ADHD. And let me tell you, that's not really a laughing matter, but somehow we make it funny and fun while people are relating to the horror of the rejection.
Yeah, that's oh man, that's one of those things that it sucks so much, like in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. But looking back, it is like, wow, like I really blew that out of proportion. And honestly, I could even start with the story from just earlier this week because it's been on my mind. So basically, you know, as I'm starting Idea Nexus Ventures, it's only like a few weeks old at this point. I've been talking with investors. The whole idea is a venture studio that can really like work on investing in people. So I had this investor that I've been talking to for several weeks and really thought it was just a done deal. And then I kind of hadn't heard anything for like a week. And so I sent him a message like, hey, just wanted to know if you needed anything from me. Like, here's a little more info on the first product we launched and what it's doing. And then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, actually, we're just going to pass. Like, decided we don't really know enough to evaluate like what you're doing there. And honestly, like, I'm kind of used to rejection at this point. I get a lot of rejection because I've been putting myself out there. But I wasn't expecting to hear that rejection. Like, that was one that I thought was like in the bag, if you will.
Yeah.
And so that hit me just way harder than I expected. And it's one of those that just, it's worse when like it's not something that you expect to be rejected in. So it's you know, come out of nowhere and just really nail you, even when you're like fully aware of it and like know what's happening. But it sucks in the moment.
It really does. And what you just illustrated there is something that I actually work with clients on, and a lot of them don't actually have ADHD, but it's something that even neurotypicals experience, that you don't even have to be, you know, neurodivergent to really understand how much it sucks to get rejected. But it's those expectations that hurt the worst, right? When you put the expectations onto something. And by the way, if you would like to look at coaching, go to untappedkeg.com or go to untappedkeg on Instagram. My DMs are open. Hit me with a DM. Tell me you'd be interested in a free 1-hour coaching call. And I have a couple of different programs, a couple of different pricing options. Let's see if working with me would be right for you. But when we take those expectations and we put them onto something that's outside of us, like how we're showing up, all of a sudden that rejection just feels like it's multiplied, right?
Right.
And if you didn't have those, that expectation of them saying yes, like how do you think that would have been a little bit different?
You know, it would have been just in line with kind of everything else that I'm doing. One of the things that I've really focused on is like, and especially in business when you're looking for investors and everything, like if you're not getting rejected, you're not putting yourself out there enough, right? You're not putting in enough work. And so I've always been kind of focused on like, I've been really doing a lot of like cold outreach and everything and you know, reaching out to even people that kind of feel are like above where I'm at now. Because like, I want to push myself. I want to make sure that I'm, you know, getting as much as I can out of it. And so like, I'm used to getting rejected. It's become something that is something I almost look forward to as a sign that I'm doing the right thing. But yeah, it was just that one that like from kind of the previous conversations I'd had, like, you know, he really seemed like, you know, that he got the idea, seemed excited by it. And that's entirely possible that it's just me completely reading things wrong as well. That's the whole autism thing. Granted, I didn't read it nearly as wrong as I did super early on in my journey, where I totally misread situations and like, but one of the things too with investors is like, they always try to like make sure not to say or do anything that might prevent them from being able to invest in the future, right? And so it's
Yes.
like they're gonna act excited until they just pass because they want you to kind of feel like they're into it. And so I think that's kind of a problem with the whole system in general. But yeah, just kind of having that expectation, because like with me, it's one of those like, okay, well, I think this is gonna happen. So when this happens, I can do this, and this. And then it's like, oh, well, that didn't happen. So now I've got to like reshuffle all sorts of things. And so it's actually even like not just rejection, it's also a bunch of extra work to kind of reshuffle kind of plans moving forward, which I had backup plans in place because I do understand that nothing is certain for sure. But yeah, I don't know. That one just, that one felt like it was going really well until it wasn't. So.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, even when you know about the expectations and you know where to put them, that doesn't mean that things don't happen, right? Like, so as I've be, you know, been newly single, like for the first time sober, first time understanding I have ADHD, all of these other things, I
Because why do
still
one
get
thing and make it easy, right? You've got to do all the hard things at
all the
once.
hard things at once. Absolutely. And then, you know, having your own business, trying to make that run.
Yeah.
It's a lot, but you know, you still get caught up with your expectations being on things, and then all of a sudden, when that rug gets pulled out from under you, it hurts. It does. And then with that rejection sensitivity dysphoria, like this is where it goes even further. Like a neurotypical might be able to bounce back fairly quickly and be able to remove things from themselves and not just place it on themselves, but where neurodivergence are and that rejection sensitivity, like it's a shot at us. Like it takes a lot longer for us to bounce back and it hurts deeper. And it's hard to describe that to people who haven't felt it, but it's just the depths to which it pulls us is it's really difficult going through life that way, especially if, and this is where I think it really ties in, is if you don't know you're neurodivergent and you see people who get rejected and they kind of just bounce back and they're like, oh yeah, that sucks. Like, and they move on. And you're like, why does it hurt me so much? Why does it take me so long? What's wrong with me that I can't bounce back from this, that I'm just kind of like stuck here? And you start to believe that there's something wrong with you, and just that loop that ends up happening there, that is so difficult. That's that you just get stuck and trapped.
Right. And then I think, kind of the follow on to that is then because you're so focused on kind of avoiding that feeling, you don't put
Yes.
yourself in a position to be rejected, which, as I kind of talked about earlier, it's like that's a sign that you're growing and you're putting yourself out there and you're trying to, go beyond your limitations. And so it's this like double-edged sword that's cutting you both ways. It's like not only does it hurt a lot more, but it's also preventing you from doing the things that you could do if you were able to not have to deal with that, right? And so over time, that can really lead to a lot of like lost opportunities and just like people who don't actually try to put themselves out there and get what they want, because you do have to do that if you want to get anywhere beyond where you currently are. Like you have to stretch yourself and you have to push yourself beyond that, but it is so hard.
And have you noticed, this is something that I've noticed with myself, and I've seen it in some of my friends, that when you're so vigilant to be looking out for the rejection, any perceived rejection feels like rejection. And then all of a sudden you're questioning, you know, what you're doing. I did literally nothing to deserve this response. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're able to take, when you're able to step back, like let's say a friend showing me a message, what do you see when you read this? And you don't see any rejection, and they start talking to you, and you can see how they saw the rejection. And it just, they took the entire thing as a rejection when really it was just somebody telling them, just please do this. And, but because they didn't say, "Will you please do this?" but they added some stuff in there, it looks like it might be a rejection. And so you just take it and you just start beating yourself up. And it's just those perceived rejections are almost worse than the actual rejections.
Right. Because,
Actually.
yeah, I think a lot of that comes from like just the way we communicate right now too. Everything, you know, we're communicating through, whether it be, you know, text or, you know, like social media, things like that. There are these very like narrow bits of communication. And so a lot of times people will just do things really quick, right? It's a really quick message. There's not a lot of like thought or intent that goes into that. And so they send it super quickly and don't think twice about it. But then you get it and receive it. And then that's something that you think about way more than they thought about when sending it. And so because it's such a small like snippet, you can inject any sort of context you want around that message and receive it any way you want. And, you know, even, you know, if you look at your phone right now and just pick the latest text message, think about different ways that that could be meant. And, you know, think about it from a negative way. Think about it from a positive way. And when you start seeing like how many ways like these little messages can actually like come across, and this is something that comes with the autism, thankfully, I think a lot about what I'm saying, and I try to really look for the exact thing that I want to say because I've been misunderstood so often. And that was actually one of the things that like led me to realizing I had autism because I had gotten into a fight with my wife about something, and because she'd said something, and I was like, "Well, you said like this, this, and this," and she's like, "Well, I was just like, I wasn't thinking about like exactly what words I was using. Like, who does that?" And I'm like, "I do that. Like, I think about the words I
Yes.
say before I say them."
Yes.
And then so that was one of the clues that I was like, "Ah, like now it's all making sense because like not everybody does that, it turns out." And so, yeah, like communication is really, really hard. And I don't think we appreciate that enough. So yeah, it's you can read anything you want in these messages. And it may be there, it may not. It's really hard to tell. And so I think the best way is always to just try to bring it up, like, "Hey, just curious, like, what did you mean by that?" And you know, surface it, because if people see it, like they'll be aware of it. And kind of like on the way of like, you know, if you're looking for rejection, you'll find rejection. When you let people see like what you're seeing, then they can see it too, and they can adjust that or not. And that'll at least make it clear. Like if you say, "Hey, like I really got a feeling of like, you know, rejection from this," and they're like, "Cool, well you suck. Well, okay, well I guess that is a rejection." Now I know it's not no longer this like thing I'm you know, just making up in my head. So
It's
brings
like that.
clarity.
It sounds like you just told me to fuck off, but you have a smile on your face. Oh, that's because I did. Yeah,
Right.
you
I just
heard
enjoy telling
that
you that.
right.
And that's
That's
totally fair too. Like, but at least it's out there.
right. And that's something that I've had to learn too is I take my time when I text and I'll like delete a message and I'm like, no, that's the theme of what I want to say, but that's not how I want to say it because I feel like it comes off as maybe a little bit passive aggressive, maybe something else. And then you'll hear somebody say, well, in this text message, you said this and what you really meant was this. And it's like, no, I said that because I meant it. Like I chose those words on purpose. Like I really did mean it. Like sometimes when you're expressing gratitude, sometimes people are like, well, you express gratitude so much there that you must be being passive aggressive. You must not mean that. And yes, that says a lot about the other person, but also, there's just so much of the communication that people read underneath for different reasons that it's like, okay, I want to make sure I'm, like you said before, when you said surface it, what I'm guessing you mean by that is like just bring it to the top, make it be known, right?
Yeah, make it visible for everybody involved. Because
Absolutely.
if it's only visible to you, then you're the only one who's dealing with it, and the other person or people involved have no clue because they're worried about their own stuff, right? I think it's really easy to get caught up in the idea that we're kind of the center of everything, when the reality is like No, people are just really busy, like, and in fact, overly busy. And that's something that I'm kind of fighting against because I think it's a detriment to society. But we've created this world in which everybody is constantly just doing all sorts of things. They have multiple issues that they're dealing with. And so there's not nearly enough time put into kind of that level of communication. And we don't leave enough space to really like, make sure that we are focusing on people more. And so, you know, we think that like, oh, well, they're like thinking about us and like they obviously hate us and they're just sitting there thinking about how much we suck. Like, no, actually they're not thinking about you at all, like most likely. Sorry. Like,
Yes.
there's just other stuff going on. And it's
Yes.
you know, so it is easy to think that we are the you know, the main character here, but in reality, we're only the main character in our own lives. And so when you start thinking of it that way, you're like, okay, well, they're probably just not even aware. And so when you send a quick message to just clarify that just helps set up that relationship more in a way that like everybody's involved or everybody's aware of like where it is, right? And so it makes sure that everybody's on the same page. And it's something that I think we need to do a better job of just, you know, clarifying that with people because it is kind of awkward and it sucks at first, but then you start to do it, and you're like, okay, it's actually not that bad because most people don't want you to think that you suck because they sent you a little message that just kind of came off like flippantly or whatever. And you know, like that's not how most people want to be perceived. And so if you actually surface that and like make it visible to everybody, then they can take action on it. And you know, like, and again, like maybe it's good action, maybe it's bad action, but at least it's action and it's no longer this like, is it or isn't it? And like, I'm just gonna sit and ruminate on it because that's how my brain works. I'm gonna think about it over and over
Yes.
and over again until I drive myself crazy. So
Turns
yeah,
out
that's a negative.
hyperfixation just aren't for physical objects.
Right.
Yeah, you brought up a quote that I heard that I've used with clients and myself because it's been incredibly helpful and it's exactly what we're talking about. Boundaries unspoken just become wishes unfulfilled. And I heard it on a podcast, and I can't remember which one it was. And I would love to give it credit, but when I heard it, I was like, wow, that is so true. And you know, boundaries, really, when you boil it down, is just showing people or telling people how you would want to be treated. Like, boil it down, that's really what it becomes, right? So if that's what it becomes, if you're not t telling somebody like, hey, like that kind of hurt my feelings. Can you not, you know, when we're talking, can you not use but? Could you just use and when you're talking about my feelings and like things I should be grateful for? Don't say, yeah, that really sucks, but there's people who have it worse. What you could say is, yeah, that really sucks, and there are people that have it worse. So you can be grateful for some of the things that you have. You can look at these things. That one word change, like it changes a lot, right? And we can change the way that we talk to ourselves that way too. But if you say it, tell somebody like, hey, you know, I appreciate what you're trying to do. It's just that when you say it in that way, it really doesn't make way for me as a person.
Right.
And that's a boundary, basically, right? And there's other ways to approach it. Boundaries are fucking complicated, but if you just boil it down to telling people how you want to be treated and how you felt about something, like that's a boundary, and that's
And
all you need.
honestly, that makes 90% of it easier, right? Like, yeah, it's still a
Yes.
hard thing,
Yes.
but it's way harder if we're all just running around with invisible fences everywhere that occasionally shock us, right? Like it's the
Yes.
dog who has no clue what's going on, but I know that if I like run that direction, it's gonna hurt, and I don't exactly know why. There's something there. Whereas
I'm
when
just
you
gonna bark
actually
louder.
like, yeah, right. And so, by making boundaries visible, that makes the other person have to consciously decide whether or not to respect that boundary. And that's again, all of a sudden, you know, like, oh, hey, turns out, even when I made this boundary very, very visible, they're not respecting it. Well, now I need to make a decision on that relationship because it's maybe not a good idea if people aren't respecting my boundaries. And so, yeah, it's we live in a complicated world where everything is very up in the air. Like social media, especially, like, is terrible for boundaries because you have very little control over like the boundaries you can set, and there's like very heavy-handed actions, you know, a lot of times with like you know blocking or something like that, but there's not a lot of like in between and nuance, and so I think that makes it harder for people because everything is much fuzzier, and you know, you can not always enforce boundaries, but I think, you know, especially in the actual, like, you know, relationships that you're focusing on building with people as opposed to kind of these like one-off interactions, that's really where you need to focus on making these things visible, because yeah, most people just won't necessarily see them because it's very, very hard right now.
It is. It really is. And it's one of those things where when you can understand that it is hard and that other people look at things, they read into things similarly to how we read into things. Now you can start to understand how you can be more assertive with your communication, or, you know, it's direct, right?
Mm-hmm.
You say what you mean and you mean what you say, and you don't leave room for, you know, for interpretation. So like one way that I found this, right? And you know, this is one of the things that, oh, hey, thanks to my divorce, right? Like something that fucking sucks. And people are like, well, you know, but you don't want somebody who's going to be there, blah, blah, blah. And they invalidate how sad and how much grief you're in. But one of the good things that came out of it was realizing, oh, I didn't tell this person how much I cared about them. I was showing them. So I assumed that they would see that because actions are harder than words, right? But it turns out for some of us, you know, me, I'm pointing at me. And for those listening, I am pointing at me. For some of us, words are harder than actions. And so when you start to understand those things about yourself, you can start to show up for the people you care about more, and you can just start to show up for yourself more, right?
Yeah.
And that's something that you can really start to use when you go through life. And then that makes your mental health raise, right? And it's not the peak, right? It's not the peak that's raising. It's actually the floor, which is
right.
Different. Like, honestly, it's not the peaks and the valleys that you want to raise or decrease. It's the floor that you want to move up, your mm-hmm. starting point, where you generally are. And yeah, that fall might get deeper, but when you get back up and you're starting each day from a higher floor, it takes a lot less to get to that joy, to get to that awe, to that wonder. And sometimes
yeah.
we forget about that.
And I think too, even like it makes it like it once you get the floor up to a certain level, I think it really makes it hard to fall much below that, right? Like it is like a solid surface that you might fall down and you're going to hit the
yeah.
floor and it might hurt, but you're not going to fall all the way through to the basement or things like that, right? And so
just watch out for the stairs,
right? What's that first step? It's a doozy. Yeah, it's you know, that is a great point where you do want to like focus on not, you know, the highs, but the baseline. Where are you normally? Because I think people don't realize how much time they spend at that baseline. Like most of life is spent at the baseline.
Yes.
And you know, if you're constantly searching for the highs but not paying attention to where you are at the baseline, cool. You might, you know, find a few fleeting moments of joy, but the rest of life is only going to be focused on those other times. Whereas if your like floor is nice and high, you're like, okay, great, I can actually just hang out here. It's a fun floor. Like, you know, it's you know, we got couches and, you know, TVs, and I got a karaoke machine. Like, it's a fun time. You know, you don't always need to go searching for, you know, those highs. And I think that's where people run into issues because they're not focusing on raising that floor. And so because they don't know what to do, they start trying to find those highs elsewhere. And, you know, a lot of negative things that will end up impacting your life. And, you know, like alcohol, right? That's a good one. That's
I
why
was
I'm
just
saying,
gonna say,
yeah,
are you talking
like
about
it,
addictions?
right? I mean, well, that's, you know, it can take any form, but that's a
Yes,
common one
I
because
agree.
it's the easiest one, right? It feels good in the moment, and you know, it makes everything kind of seem lesser, kind of makes you think that you're doing well, but over time, it's just a very, very negative cycle that actually. If anything, I'd say it really pushes your floor lower and lower instead of bringing it up. And so that's the biggest danger of like every time you're looking for the high, your floor goes lower. And so that where you were previously isn't actually like it doesn't get you as far up as it did before. And so you have to
Yep.
keep pushing harder and harder. And so the floor keeps going down and down, and then you're at rock bottom.
And this is a great time to say you don't have to hit a rock bottom to change your relationship, right? You can see that it's going down and be like, okay, I don't like where this is going. Let's get off of this right now. Let's get off of that elevator and get into something that is there. But, you know, like you said, it can take the any form. And this is why, like, I'm not the biggest fan of the word addiction. This is why I tell people to use the words that work for them, whether that's, you know, that's sober, whether that's alcohol free. You know, if you want to say you're an alcoholic, go for it, right? These things that work for you, use them. And addiction is one of them that maybe it will work. The thing is, understand that you're not broken. And there's a stigma attached to those that when you have a conversation, people will see a box. They'll put you into it. They'll put themselves into it. They'll all of a sudden look at things and start to have that less than feeling and not actually see the things around it, the things outside of it. And Laura McCowan, you know, ended up using the phrase, I used to call it escapism, but she said ritualized comfort seeking. And I was like, that is such a more positive spin on it, where even escapism, there's some negative connotations with that, and it sounds it's almost too strong. But when you have ritualized comfort seeking, it's like, what are you actually doing in those, right? And this could be, these could look like work, this could look like your kids, this could look like your spouse, your partner in a relationship. It could look like so many things, like food. There's so many things that you look at and you're a little bit innocuous. But as you start to look at it, you put so much time and energy into that thing that without it, who are you? Who, what is this thing? What are you looking for from that thing that you're seeking comfort from? Can you get it outside of that? And if the answer is no, then you're putting too much into what that is.
Yeah, and so a couple things there. So first of all, a few minutes ago you said that like you don't always have to like hit rock bottom.
Yes.
And I think an alternate way to look at that is rock bottom is only the lowest that you're willing to go, and that can be
Yes.
anywhere.
I agree.
Rock bottom
Yeah.
could be super high, like, and
Yep.
this I just refuse to go below this. And so, you know, when you kind of look at it from like a place of like, okay, this is the lowest, and then it's just up from here, you know, you can start climbing out. But then like the ritualized comfort I love too, because that lets you kind of see it in relation to other things. And so if you can't get that comfort elsewhere, like first of all, like why do you need a place to go for comfort? Like, what is causing that stress or you know, those feelings of something that you need comfort from? And you know, like a lot of times we, you know, it's totally cool to find comfort in all sorts of things.
Yes.
But that ritualized piece means that there's something else that is putting a lot of like stress and everything that's causing you to come back and back and back. And so it's worth reflecting on, like, what is that? Because maybe I can't change like the ritualized comfort so easily, but I can reduce whatever's causing other issues and looking for alternatives. And so it's kind of flipping that idea of like getting away from something to going towards something better on the other side.
Yeah. And instead of having that one thing that you go to for that quick fix, right? Which it's healthy to have those things. There's nothing wrong with having like that one thing that you go to at 5 p.m. every day that is like that ritual that, you know, whatever it is, even if it's a beer, if it's a glass of alcohol, like if it's that one thing, okay. But when you take it to a point where it's interfering with your life, where it's interfering with other areas of your life, and you're looking at it and you're like, this just isn't something that I want to do anymore, but you're stuck in that because it's that ritual, and you feel like you need it. You have to have it or else you can't do these other things. And that's when it becomes, okay, why is it this one thing? Can I have a bunch of other things that I can go to? And then let's say I do this, I come home after work and I have a Mountain Dew. Let's say, because I used to do that. Oh, when I stopped drinking. And it's like, okay, so I switched a beer, which I was an all or nothing drinker. So I was not just having one beer. Right. And I wasn't doing that after work. But let's say I was, right? And I switched it to Mountain Dew. Did I just change out a beer for Mountain Dew? Well, yes. Is that such a bad thing? Maybe not, because am I using that Mountain Dew as kind of like just this line, this flag, this, you know, it's that ritual, it's that tradition, it's that, damn it, I'm looking for a word and I can't find it. it's like, do you ever feel like, tangent, ADHD time, do you ever feel like you have words and you can taste them because you know which one you want, but it's not coming out? Does that ever,
yes.
Do you ever, gosh, I wonder if neurotypicals have that. Leave some in the comments, neurotypicals, if you have that.
They may already be gone by now, let's be honest.
That's true.
Like we just lost them. But that's all right. They'll eventually find their way back here. It's more fun. But yeah, no, I definitely see what you're saying, though, because that's something that like you need that indicator of like the shift sometimes, and especially when you're someone who like puts a ton of yourself and your energy into your work, it can be really hard to flip that off. And so having some sort of, you know, ritual that you can do to just signal that, like, okay, it's like we're done working, now it's like relaxing time, whatever, that can be like a very beneficial thing, because you won't push yourself to like the point of burnout. And I think that's something we see with a lot of people like working from home, right? And it's something that I have sometimes a hard time doing, of like knowing when to shut off. And so, you know, kind of one of the things that I do each night is after I kind of finish up and like, okay, we eat dinner and you know, watch TV, and I'll sit and kind of play video games. My current obsession is Red Dead Redemption 2. Phenomenal game. Again, I had played it previously as well. But it's something that, like, okay, cool. This doesn't have to be like a productive thing. It's something that I can, you know, find comfort and escape into, whatever. And it's totally fine. Like, you don't need to apologize for stuff like that, right? It's, but it kind of feels like we do at times, because it's like, oh, but I need to be productive. I need to do more and more and more. And the answer is like that you don't, because that's actually more harmful, because what it's doing is like, okay, you might get more done now, but eventually you're going to hit that point where you've completely burnt yourself out and you have no energy to do anything. And then what? Because you're not going to be able to do what you need to do. And so really paying attention to those energy levels and figuring out ways to convince your body to flip the switch before you completely run out and you know, have no more left, I think is really important. So finding those types of rituals to get you to shut off, I think, is actually a good thing, you know. And it can obviously, you know, when it does become all or nothing, right? I used to be pretty similar to that, and it was something that, like, okay, well, cool. You know, come home, like have a six pack or a 12 pack or whatever. And when I really figured like what was, when I figured out what was happening, that no longer became something that was necessary. Like, it just didn't even become anything that I wanted to do, because I had things that I was focusing on. I had, you know, these bigger goals that I was working toward, and I really understood what my values were. And so I wasn't just like pushing myself for the benefit of everybody else, and then like, okay, well, now I'm just going to make it all go away because I can't deal with it.
Indicator was the word I was looking for.
Indicator. There we go.
Go back to it. I knew you would appreciate that. But like what you're saying, like it was like, it just trips something into me because I think this is society at large. A lot of the comfort that we seek, and I'm just going to talk about US society, but I think this is globally society right now, is productivity. How much do you put into being productive, right? Like that's almost like the comfort. When you're productive, you feel comfortable. So you're always seeking a time to be productive. How often can you actually allow yourself to rest?
It's tough. Like, everybody wants to be productive all the time. And I think a big part of it is that we don't actually know what work is valuable. And so because we don't know what work is valuable, we just try to work as much as possible in hopes that we get lucky and create value. This is something that I've really been exploring in a lot of ways. And actually, I'm in the middle of writing a piece on how we use energy, right? And specifically how creativity plays into that, because in kind of a knowledge economy, right? Productivity doesn't actually matter that much. It's the creativity that can really shift things for people. And one of the things I found in kind of my just research and personal experience is that your creativity is the highest when you're at your like max energy level. And my belief here is that basically when you've got like a ton of energy and you're ready to go, your brain can just take like a little bit of that energy and like put it into stuff in the background and like work on making different connections and everything. But the lower you drop that energy, the lower your creativity goes, because your brain doesn't have that extra to kind of pull from without affecting everything else that you're doing. And so your brain is like, oh, you need energy for this. You need energy for this. So the harder you push yourself, the lower your creativity goes. And so by forcing people into these like being super productive and like getting as much done as possible, we're not actually leaving that energy or that space for that creativity to happen. And so that just ends up like replicating the same problems over and over and over again. Whereas if we focus on just giving people the ability to make sure they're at their like highest energy level as often as possible. And you know what? That probably doesn't look like a 40-hour work week. It probably doesn't look like a 9-to-5 in an office. In fact, like I'm a big believer in the fact that we should start like, I kind of look at it as like overpaying for human energy, because I think that's kind of something that is undervalued. So we think of like the power company, right? And you pay a certain amount for energy that's being cranked out by a power plant at some like set, you know, rate. That's not how humans work. Like, humans don't just put stuff out constantly at a steady rate. It's this very like complex system that we don't have a lot of control over. So what you have to do is you have to give people the space to arrange their lives in whatever ways really maximize their energy levels, because then you can unlock that creativity and, you know, all of this like magical stuff that can happen and these different connections, because people have that extra energy that their brain can use to make those connections. And so, you know, really, I think going forward, we need to reimagine what productivity is, because most of it's just stuff that we use to feel busy and doesn't actually accomplish anything. So what happens when we get rid of all of that? Well, first of all, it's going to feel weird, because probably 90% of it is gone. And then it's like, cool, well, now I'm only like working this little bit. So what do I do? Like, what do I do with the rest of my time? And the answer is live. But that's really hard, because we've created this identity around being productive. And what happens if I'm not productive?
Damn. And there's been times, and I know other people have said this too, so you know, I took it from other places, but it's like, we have all these things that we say we would die for, but what are the things we would actually live for? Do we actually acknowledge that? Like, you know, where I really noticed this was, I said I say all the time, I will die for my kids. And I will. I absolutely will. I will die so that my kids can live. But are they going to go through life focusing on what they would die for? Or are they actually going to live? And so if I would die for my kids, am I willing to live for them, live alongside of them? Because I don't just want to live for my kids. I want them to understand and take part in and see my life and how I live so that they can take it and understand that they get the choice to live, or they get the choice of focusing on what they would die for.
Dying for stuff is easy.
Yeah,
It's a one-off,
absolutely.
right? You
Yeah.
do it and you're done. You don't have to worry about it anymore. Living for
Most of
something's
us
a lot harder.
are focusing on the dying part, so then we're just
Right.
going through life like, oh, I just can't wait to die. But we're saying
I'm gonna
it
die
as
for something.
I
Well,
can't wait
no,
for
like,
retirement, right?
but yeah, no, that's just beautifully said because, like, yeah, what do you live for? And I even saw like a discussion online about, parenting and what a good parent is, and like really, I think the best thing, like the best parent you can be, is simply being the best person you can possibly be and showing that as the example to your kids. Like, live the life that you think is ideal so that your kids like see that and follow that. Like, you can tell them all sorts of shit, but what they're gonna really pay attention to is like the life that you lived and
Yes.
whether or not that's something they wanna replicate or not. And so like that's one of the things that I focus on. It's like, what do I want to show my kids about the world in terms of the life that I'm living? Do I want to show them that you have to be stuck in a job that you hate where you're, grinding yourself day in and day out to no end? Or do I want to show them a world in which like, no, you can follow your dreams. You can do like what you believe in. You can follow the pathless path and go off the beaten track and just enjoy it and not worry about the people who will judge you, because really what it is they're seeing you live the life that they wish they could live and they don't have the courage to actually go for it. And so instead of trying to live it themselves, they just throw barbs at the people who are living that life. But the key is like when you're living that life, you don't care. You don't notice them. You're too busy living, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, cool. Like, you keep talking about all that stuff that I can't do that I'm over here doing. So, and I'm going to enjoy it. And that's the most powerful thing you can do for your kids. And it is. It's that living for something, not trying to die for everything.
And that's one of the most powerful ways that I get through to people with their self-talk is if your child or a child that you cared a lot about spoke to themselves the way that you speak to yourself, would you be proud of that? Would you allow them to keep speaking to themselves that way? And it doesn't matter the hardened person that I'm like, that is telling me that I'm full of shit and I don't know what I'm talking about. Every single person is like, oh, I wouldn't like that. Okay, you wouldn't like that. Why don't you like that? Well, they're valuable. They need to see their value. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. Okay, you're valuable to them. You can't do things for them without you doing them. So why do you talk to yourself that way? And it's just like their eyes get wide, and that light switch goes off and it's like, oh, there is something to this a little bit. And I'm not saying get all puffy and use, the unicorn or rainbow language, because you're not ready for that yet. But, and I don't even, it's not about the positivity. It's not about taking things and finding the lesson and everything. What it is it's about taking that, the barbs and the toxicity and that sharpness out of it, and just finding like the truth and the neutral, the neutral that I call it. But really it's just, what is it that I can use? Can I
Right.
use, I'm such a piece of shit. Can I use that to be better? No, I cannot. Like, and the things that resonate with that. Last night, I was thinking, this is why I woke up. Now I know why I woke up in such a good mood. I was thinking about like what it is that is holding me back and like keeping me from really going out there and like telling my story and trying to make myself seen. And all of a sudden I heard that voice has been so low, and all of a sudden put words to it, right? Who am I? I'm nobody. And I'm like, that's a humble thing to say, right? I'm nobody. But no, that's not a humble thing. I'm RJ, right? That is who I am. I'm not nobody. I'm RJ. And so I'm sharing my experience. That's not a nobody thing. And when I realize that, it's like, oh, I'm still calling myself a piece of shit without calling myself a piece of shit. So what's useful in that? I'm nobody. And I think it's useful because I'm being humble, but I'm not actually being humble because it's not true. I am right. Somebody. And so taking that and using it, it's like, oh, now I get it. Now I understand. I don't have to be like, yeah, I'm the best thing. Like, I have so much to tell. It's just, no, I'm RJ. And that's enough. Right. And I have my experience.
Yeah. So I think that, that touches on a couple of things. Like, I think first of all, when we're trying to think of who we are, one of the things that we default to is this idea of like a hierarchy, right? The ladder. Where am I on the ladder? And so it's like, oh, well, if I'm like, you know, below, you know, so-and-so, like I'm nobody, I don't matter. The reality though is like, there aren't any actual ladders. Like, it's this wide open space and you are exactly where you are. Like, nobody's really above and below everybody, except in these like weird power structures that we create in like companies that have a lot of negative connotations, but you're just somewhere in the world and you are you, and it's completely unique from exactly where everybody else is. And people have like similarities in their position to where you are. And some people have more similarities than others, but everybody's just where they are, and they got there on like whatever path that they're on. Everybody's just kind of wandering around. And then kind of with what you were talking about earlier, like that negative self-talk and, you know, taking the barbs out of it. So what that made me think of is like, oh, you realize that you're not on the right path and you see the right path over here. But let's imagine that it's like really overgrown with like sticker bushes and thorns, right? And sure, you can push your way through that and it's going to cut the shit out of you. And you're going to go through and you're going to come out bleeding on the other side and like drain. Like, but you can also just like take a pair of clippers and like clear the trail before you go. And then just walk. And then like you get through it and you're like, okay, great. Like, I'm ready to just continue down the path. And I'm not laying there bleeding and like run out of energy because I wanted to show that I was tough enough to just go through the stickers. It's like, yeah, like you can do that, but like, isn't there a better way? And sometimes you just need to pull out the clippers and just like clear the path a little bit so that you can walk through without getting torn apart.
Or you can find somebody bigger than you to walk in front of you. So there's that.
That also helps, yeah. I can be that person.
That's such a great analogy. And like, what came to mind was when I was a high voltage line tech, we'd have to walk through the woods all the time when the lines go cross country, and raspberry bushes are the fucking worst. And the thing is, sometimes it would be 1,000 feet of just straight raspberry bushes you'd have to walk through. And so who would be up front? Of course it'd be me, because I'm the most bullheaded fucking stubborn one, and I'm going to get through these. Meanwhile, everybody's walking behind me and they're like, wow, you know, you seem like you're getting really tired. What's going on? And so it's like, oh yeah, I guess, you know, your analogy brought that up of, oh, maybe we could have used some of the saws that we had with us to take care of that as we went. Oh, that would make it a lot easier if we have to walk this line a second time. But nope, I'm just going to grab it and go, just try to get through it. And
yeah, that's how we are. Like it's a common theme, whether it's an analogy or actual real life, which is just that's perfect. You actually have the exact
like, and it doesn't matter if you're wearing long sleeves, like those thorns get through.
They'll go right through. Yeah.
And the thing is with raspberry bushes, like they're not really big long thorns, but they're thin enough that just it does not feel good. It doesn't. No. And then I come home and people are like, hey, what happened to you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then look at my arms, and my arms are bleeding. And I'm like, oh, work.
Yeah. We accept all those scratches as something that's just like part of it, but it doesn't actually need to be. And that's the thing, like when you're used to doing things a certain way, like it becomes just second nature. And so like, yeah, you push through the raspberry bush because it's there and you need to go through it. We often don't have the time and space to think of like, oh, how can I deal with this that doesn't involve me bleeding? That's that creativity piece I was talking about, right? It's like giving yourself a moment to just stop and say, huh, do I actually need to go through this? Or is there a better way? And there's almost always a better way. Like, sure, maybe there are cases where you have to push through the raspberry bush. You know, you don't have clippers or Saul's dead, whatever. But most cases, like, there are different ways to go. And giving yourself that time and space to just stop and think about it. And then, you know, it's that the metacognition piece, right? Like as you're, you know, think about what you're thinking about and see if you're the one installing the bushes ahead of you on the path. Because sometimes maybe just don't install those thorn bushes. Like don't plant them and then try to walk through them. And all of a sudden you bleed a lot less.
And then you have more energy to be creative.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The energy that would have been, you know, involved in storming through the thorn bushes can then be put into avoiding the next patch of thorn bushes and, you know, mapping out the path. Oh, well, actually, now that I have this energy, instead of having to push through this like small area that's really hard, I can actually just walk around a little bit. And maybe it's a slightly longer path, but that's okay because I'm energetic now because I didn't waste all that energy. And so it's like, okay, I don't mind taking the longer path because it's a little easier, a little scenic, you know, it's a beautiful view. Like, I don't know. We can stretch this analogy pretty far, I think, but, you know,
that's what we do. We beat things into the ground. Let's go.
Exactly. Hey, as long as it's ideas and not ourselves, we're doing well.
That is true. I love beating a good joke into the ground to the point that, you know, it's at the center of the earth, but
yeah, I will find it way funnier if everybody else no longer finds it funny.
Yes.
Ask my kids, especially with like the daddiest of dad jokes, if you will. Yes, I will absolutely run those into the ground so deep that, yeah, we're talking coming out the other side at that point.
And then it's funny again.
Right.
But it doesn't get funny again unless you keep ramming into the ground.
So true.
That's what it's about. Oh, God. It is so much fun talking to you, Leo.
Likewise.
If people wanted to keep up with you, what would be the best way to do that?
You know, honestly, Twitter's probably the best. Leo_Guinan. I'm on there still way too often. It's a love-hate relationship with it. I love it because people are throwing out all sorts of just ideas. Like it is a lot of people just thinking in public. Also, the mechanisms make it really hard for me to get off of it, and I hate that about it. But I'm still there. So if you send me a DM, like my DMs are open. I love talking to people. If anything I say sounds interesting, I probably have written something about it or recorded you know, other interviews about it. And if I haven't, I'll probably either like just talk with you about it, or I'll write something, or I'll record a YouTube video, or all of the above, because basically I use conversations as ways to determine what I want to create next. So yeah, I love having conversations and my calendar. Unlike a lot of people who like guard their calendar because they're trying to be as productive as possible, I have a pretty open calendar policy. I will give you my calendar link and let you schedule some time to talk with me. I don't care who you are. Cause that's fun. That's the magic. It's the connecting with people that I love. So that's the best place. Also, do have a YouTube channel, Idea Supply Chain. Take a look at where ideas come from and what makes them valuable. Kind of on that, you know, thing about energy. I think that's a big piece of it. And like really understanding like what is actually valuable and like where we're putting our energy. Because I think we just waste a lot of it doing shit that doesn't actually matter. So There's that. And then you can also check out myaicofounder.com. And so that's actually where I'm looking at similar things to a lot of what we talked about in terms of like capturing ideas. So it's all about just like writing down your thoughts and then making things happen because of them. I want to minimize the time and energy that you're spending on the productivity part, so you have more time and space for the creativity part, because that's the piece that actually matters. And that is what you're amazing at. And I want to make that easier. So check out my AI co-founder and play around with it. Let me know what you think, because yeah, I want to make all the bullshit go away so that you can actually focus on living.
And really, that's what this entire episode has been about.
Yeah.
Is get past the bullshit so you can focus on living. Or unicorn shit, you know, if it's me talking about.
Hey. Unicorn shit is valuable. Like, it's hard to find.
Have I ever told you my analogy and how life is all rainbows and unicorns?
No, I don't think you have. Or you haven't, I've forgotten it because ADHD.
So, you know, here's a treat for the people. Life is all rainbows and unicorns, but we forget that unicorns are animals and they got to shit. And so while we're busy admiring the unicorns, all the shit piles up around us and starts to stink, and all we can start to focus on is the shit. And we resent the unicorns because they made such a mess that now we have to clean up. But as we start to clean that shit up, we start to see those rainbows again and we admire them. And then as we get to a point that there's not that much shit, we can admire the unicorns for their beauty too. And so if we just clean our shit up as it's going on, life really is all rainbows and unicorns, and we can admire just about anything.
Damn, I love that. That's such a great analogy, because yeah, like if you're not cleaning the shit up, it piles up, and then that is all you can focus on, because you are just surrounded by shit.
Yeah. That was a
podcast. Clean your shit
one.
Up.
I came up with that live on a podcast. It was fantastic. And I've just taken it and ran with it, beat it into the ground. Now it's coming out the other side. Let's go.
That's right. I mean, that's, and by going all the way through, you've now created a nice hole that you can just dump all the shit into.
Oh, look at that. You know what? And then it ends up burning when it gets to the center of the earth, and you're just getting energy on the other side. Green energy. Let's go.
Exactly.
It's
we just
always
solved the
so
energy
much fun,
crisis and everything.
Right?
It's great. Like, it's all unicorn
there,
shit.
There are actual farms that do that. I don't know if you know that. They take the cow manure and then they end up burning it and running their farm off of that. And then some of the energy, if they have the right equipment and it cleans it up, because it's quote unquote dirty energy. The reason it's dirty is because, okay, I can get really deep into it, but just know it's not actually dirty. It just isn't running at the same sine waves as what's out there.
Right.
And so if they don't have the proper equipment, it doesn't actually go out on the line. But that's a way that farmers can save money, especially if they have a lot of manure they don't know what to do with. So boom, now you know.
Also, maybe you can get a sponsorship from any company that builds equipment for dealing with shit. Actually, that would be really funny.
That would be great.
And like, you know, I think we need to workshop that a bit. That would be fun. Like, deal with your shit. Like,
wow. I like that. Porta potty companies, let's go. You know, hit me
there
up.
We go.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. I had a friend whose name was John, and I said, if you don't start a company called, and his last name started with a T, Johnny T's Porta Johns, I'm disowning you as a friend. And guess what? He never created that company, so we're not friends anymore. So Johnny T, you did it to yourself.
Maybe you could come, you know, rebuild that relationship. Say, hey, here's your chance. You build that company, and then you sponsor this channel.
That's right. That's right. Clean your shit. So clean your unicorn shit so you can admire the rainbows. There's the tagline. Somebody take it. Run with it.
There for you.
Go follow Leo. Go follow Leo. Schedule some time to talk, because let me tell you, you will laugh. You will gain knowledge. You will go down rabbit holes. It is so much fun. And the kindness that emanates from Leo is just, it's something that's, when you experience it, it's something you don't take for granted. And so I want to thank you for coming on and having the conversation with me today, Leo. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, RJ. I appreciate you and everything that you're doing here. I think you're, you know, just doing a wonderful thing to help people. So any way I can support that, I'm always happy to, because yeah, you're doing the shit that matters. And you're helping people deal with their shit. Cause guess what? If you have to deal with all the shit yourself, like, it sucks. But when you have a lot of people shoveling the shit, it gets shoveled a lot faster. So again, we'll beat that into the ground. We'll make sure that you can only think about piles of shit after you watch this episode. But you'll know how to deal with it. So it'll be okay.
Rainbowsandunicorns.com, website about shoveling shit near you. that's got to happen. I wonder if that's available. Somebody's got to have that, right?
I know.
So this has been Untapped Keg, a podcast where we talk about sobriety and mental health, different perspectives that people have so that you can take something, implement it into your own life. We believe there's only one right way to sobriety, the way that works for you. I'm RJ Zimmerman. Please rate the podcast, leave us a review, and give Untapped Keg a follow on Instagram under Untapped Keg. You can actually find it on all social media. All the DMs are open. Hit me up if you want to talk, and
do it.
Try to be better tomorrow than we were today. Because at least we don't make it, we tried. Love you, everybody.